The Liberals Gun Corner, a proud member of the Gun Rights Radio Network, hosted by Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun. This podcast is always available at www.liberalsguncorner.com, and you can email us at cowboyt@liberalsguncorner.com. Cowboy T, San Francisco liberal with a gun here. Sorry to be gone so long, folks. Had some things, some personal stuff that I need to take care of. But we're back at it now. Back in the saddle again. The Liberals Gun Corner, far as I'm concerned, is here for the long haul. So we're going to celebrate that long haul intent with another two-parter episode. Given the nature of our subject this time, sort of has to be a two-parter. By now, everyone's probably long since been aware of the Senate's refusal to pass any of the gun restriction measures put forward by the leaders of the Democratic Party, including our first black American president, Mr. Barack H. Obama, and one of our more prominent Jewish senators, Mrs. Dianne Feinstein. You know, I find it so ironic that these two particular people could be in favor of such gun restrictions on us law abiders. The first black president of this country and a Jewish senator acutely aware of what happened during the Holocaust. Have they forgotten or chosen to ignore that the roots of their very own proposed gun restrictions are in fact racist in nature? Oh no, here comes Cowboy T playing the race card. But it turns out, yeah, they are. That is their nature. That is where they come from. See, I've been doing a fair amount of reading up on this over the last, I'd say, couple of months. And yeah, we're going to talk about that. Our topic, the racist roots of gun control. I'm going to show you why that's true. First, it's a good idea to take a look at why government officials might like to restrict the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Okay. Let's take a look at the Philippines first. Former Governor Jesse Ventura was on the Piers Morgan show last year. Ventura spoke about how he was in the Philippines the day that Ferdinand Marcos took over and what he did. Let's listen to Governor Ventura's own description of it.
Gun control. This is something I've been very animated about all this year with all the various gun outrages, especially the appalling thing at the cinema in Colorado. Yep. Why is it that Americans, to me it seems, so many Americans cannot divorce their right to defend themselves with a gun to the apparent right to go and buy 6,000 rounds of ammunition, high-powered assault weapons, and go and murder Americans?
Well, the best thing I can tell you, Piers, is this. Mexico has strict gun control. You cannot own a gun in Mexico. And they had 20,000 people dead last year in the drug cartel wars.
But Mexico has a very particular problem involving drugs. I can cite you Britain.
All right.
Average. Well, let me just throw it back at you. In Britain, for example, an average of 35 people a year are murdered with guns. In Germany, it's about 40 to 50. France, the same. Spain, the same. Italy, there's a pattern here. America, 11 to 12,000 a year.
Yeah.
This country has more guns than anybody else
yep.
and more gun murders.
Yeah.
It's inarguable, isn't it?
No, not
it
at
is.
All.
It is.
Because I was in the Philippines physically the day Ferdinand Marcos declared martial law and made himself a dictator. And the first thing that dictator did, he gave the people of the Philippines 2 weeks to turn in all their guns or it was the death penalty. Now, why would a dictator do that? Why would he make his number one priority when he took over as dictator to disarm the public? The Second Amendment is there. So, and it was put in there not for hunting and fishing, like they like to say, because back when they did it, if you didn't hunt or fish, you didn't eat. It was put in there so the citizens would have the ability, if their government became oppressive, they could defend themselves against oppressive government.
I'm not sure about you folks, but I've read about similar things happening when dictators have come into power. The Soviet government was just as bad, by the way. We know what happened in Tiananmen Square also in 1989. One survivor who now lives here in the United States, he talked about it just last year. He's in his 40s now. I got to tell you, it was harrowing to hear his account of what happened. As he put it, imagine if those 20 million residents of Beijing, China, had had access to, a couple million guns, like what the army had. Then things might have been a little different, huh? And I think we all can imagine how nice the people of North Korea would view the ability to have some guns and ammo. So, I'd say, folks, it's pretty obvious that people in power restrict the access to effective weaponry in order to keep control over the populace. That's the reason. It's not about gun control. It's about people control. Always has been. I know. What's all that got to do with us, though? What good does all this running around globally and all over the world, as well as internationally, what does that do for us here? Well, it was used here, too. Yeah, here, right in the good old U.S. of A. It was called the Black Codes. Wenton Marcellus made an album about that. He entitled it as such to bring attention to it, to remind people that this existed. Here's what the Black Codes were. This is a bunch of laws specifically designed to keep black people from being able to revolt against the white power structure of that day. After all, it's a little harder, I think we'll all agree, to enslave people and keep them in bondage when they can shoot back. This started before the founding of this country, back when we were still the 13 colonies. And speaking of colonies, I happen to live in one of those former colonies. In my case, it's Virginia. You may know of Virginia as the former capital of the Confederacy. Yeah, it's true. It's also known for a lot of other things, too, though. Virginia is known for beautiful scenery. Really, it's absolutely gorgeous. I hadn't seen anything like it when I first came out here. They're known for good wines. Good California boy that I am, I appreciate a good wine, naturally, and Virginia has several. Horsemanship, even fox hunts. Yeah, they do that. They do the old school English style fox hunts out here. Tally ho! Here's another one. Virginia is one of the major worldwide network traffic hubs of the internet. Being a good geek, naturally, I appreciate that. They got good beaches out here. I really like Virginia's beaches, and they got some great gun shows out here, folks. Well, compared to California, that's for doggone sure. Virginia is also known for some other things, though, too. Like massive resistance, Jim Crow, the Black Codes, which I just mentioned, Confederacy worship in a lot of parts of it, much like other parts of the South, of course. It's no different. Oh, yeah, Virginia is still very much the South. Make no mistake. Some of the things that I still hear about folks who aren't white, Christian, conservative, I won't repeat them because they're pretty darn nasty. Colin Powell was right when he spoke about that a few years back. This was in 2008. So, let's go back in time a bit. To the 17th century. The beginnings of Virginia. Old Virginia, the old Dominion, as a colony. Back then, just like today, you had the elites of that day, the aristocrats, wanting to obtain and consolidate their power. This is just like in any other age, folks, no different. The aristocrats wanted to keep the lower classes from being able to effectively challenge their power. They really wanted to disarm everybody, including the poor whites. But they also figured out pretty quickly that this was pretty impractical. Why was it impractical? Two reasons. Pirates and Indians. Remember, the American Indians started resenting European encroachment onto their homes, and some of those Indians decided to resist. That Disney movie Pocahontas, that's got nothing to do with reality. Well, almost nothing, other than the fact that there was a Pocahontas. Well, to combat this threat from those savage Indians, that required weaponry in people's hands. So the aristocrats came up with a strategy. They let the poor whites be armed, yeah, but restrict the Negroes from doing likewise. Can we say divide and conquer, boys and girls? Ah, I knew you could. Yeah, that's what they did. Thus, the poor whites learned pretty quickly that they were above any black person. This is a strategy that would continue all throughout the era of slavery, of course. When we became a nation, you know that bit about we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their creator with certain unalienable rights, and so on. Well, you still had to keep the slave population under control somehow. Among many other things, that certainly included keeping effective weaponry out of the hands of the Negroes. Oh, by the way, this also included the free blacks, too. The freemen, as they called. Why the free blacks? Why the freedmen? So, that's easy. Because they provided the dangerous example to enslaved blacks that freedom was actually achievable. Furthermore, white slave owners were scared to death, folks, that a free black might be sympathetic to the cause of freedom for all blacks. Such a Negro might foment dissent, maybe even rebellion. And, as history tells us, that actually did happen a few times. The most famous of those, well, that was Nat Turner's Rebellion of 1831. After that, man, things were already tough. But then they got even tougher. Maryland is right next to Virginia. Do you know that Maryland required free blacks to get a permit to own so much as a dog? Yeah, a dog. And Mississippi slapped a complete ban on blacks owning dogs. Apparently, the white slave owners were afraid that blacks might use their dogs as weapons against their good masters. Wow, folks. That's pretty paranoid, ain't it? Oh, there were laws like this all over the South back in the pre-Civil War days. So those states were not hardly at all unique. In the wake of Nat Turner's rebellion, Georgia absolutely forbade any firearms ownership by any black person, free or slave. Louisiana, they not only forbade firearms ownership, they also even forbade the teaching of fencing. South Carolina, Alabama, Tennessee, all of them, same thing. Keep the Negroes disarmed. We don't want them getting any dangerous ideas now. Matter of fact, the Georgia Supreme Court stated this in 1846 to justify their race-based gun ban. Quote, "Free persons of color have never been recognized here as citizens. They are not entitled to bear arms, vote for members of the legislature, or to hold any civil office." Close quote. And Georgia wasn't the only state government to use that justification. Free persons of color were simply declared not citizens. By the way, that also kept the Indians from keeping and bearing arms, too, since they were, how did they put it? Not persons within the meaning of the law? Yeah, folks, I know. That's how it was back then. But, of course, the Civil War did happen. The Emancipation Proclamation was written. The South was defeated. And the 13th and 14th Amendments were ratified, which should have put an end to all this, right? That's the subject we're going to tackle as soon as we get back from Station ID break. Much more to come, folks. Stick around.
You can hear Gun Rights Radio Network on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly from your iPhone, Android phone, BlackBerry, or Palm phones. On demand and on the go. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com or in the app stores. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Gun Rights Radio Network shows can be found under sources.
Okay, we're back. It's the aftermath of the Civil War. The 13th and 14th Amendments to the Constitution are ratified, and the former Confederate Southern states are now back in the Union. We know that the former masses still don't view the Negroes as fully people, no, but those two new amendments should set things right. Right? I wish. Remember that the justification for those gun restriction laws, the ones that kept black people disarmed, was that they were not citizens. Well, that nonsense was the reason for the 14th Amendment. So, the Southern legislatures couldn't have such bans anymore. Not like that. If you're a white Southerner who's got visions of black people now able to legally bear arms against you, just think about this. And you know what you've been doing to those black people all those years. You're not happy about this at all. So, Southern states passed laws that required licenses for gun ownership. Today, those licenses are called permits, kind of like what New York City has. Here's one of those laws. Oh, this is a real gem. This one's from Mississippi, right after the Civil War ended. Quote, be it enacted that no freedman, free Negro, or mulatto not in the military and not licensed to do so, by the Board of Police of his or her county shall keep or carry firearms of any kind or any ammunition. And all such arms or ammunition shall be forfeited to the informer. Guess, folks, who the informers were. They were those oh-so-Christian folks, the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, that terrorist organization that's been operating for nearly the last 150 years. Yep, any confiscated firearms were given to the Klan. Or, if there wasn't a Klan chapter, then the local militia. Always white, of course. Or, perhaps, the local sheriff. Wait a minute. That's right, the local sheriff and other police officers were very often part of the Klan. Yeah, I almost forgot about that. Well, now the blacks are disarmed, those infamous Midnight Riders were free to commit their terrorist acts against black people and oppress them. The result of that was something called the Civil Rights Act of 1866 that nullified those laws that discriminated based on race. Those former slave owners didn't like that at all. So, the solution, quote-unquote solution, was to pass gun restriction laws that were, quote-unquote, race neutral on their faces. But, yep, you guessed it. Selectively enforced, only against black people and certain troublesome whites. You know, like Yankees or anyone else that might have viewed black people as actual people. Yeah, I know, crazy, isn't it? But, yeah, it was the same thing. We have the Voting Rights Act of 1965 for a very specific reason. The history of poll taxes, literacy tests, and other things that were used specifically to deny black Americans the right to vote. Racially neutral on their faces. We all know by now that those poll taxes and the literacy tests were enforced only against black people, not against white people. Well, the same thing was done with firearms ownership. The exact same thing, folks. I'm sure you've all heard of something called the Saturday Night Special. You know, inexpensive handguns. Guns that aren't exactly Smith & Wesson's, Ruger's, Glock's, Sig Sauer's, you know, the high-dollar stuff and so on, but rather something that even relatively poor folks can afford. Back in 1879, the state of Tennessee passed something called the Army and Navy Law. This law limited the legal purchase of handguns to the Remington 1858 and 1860 models of revolver. Anyone who's ever shot one of these old black powder guns knows that they're very well made. However, back then, they were expensive. Very few, if any, black people could afford them. Poor whites had trouble with the cost, too. But somehow, they managed to get them just the same. How's that? Oh, yeah. They had access to them during the Civil War, didn't they? Yeah, so they probably already owned them. Actually, the record shows that they did. Or, if they didn't, they were already pretty well off and could buy them. But generally, they were using, say, service revolvers that they had gotten from their participation in the Civil War. But poor blacks? Well, with very few exceptions, they weren't generally allowed to be soldiers in the Confederate Army. So, well, no access that way. Too bad, so sad. Here's a modern example. The High Point pistols that are increasingly popular today. I've actually shot a couple of High Point pistols. They are definitely not pretty. Oh, no. Matter of fact, some people have called them butt ugly. They're top-heavy because of their blowback action. They feel top-heavy, too. But I got to tell you, they work pretty well. They're actually pretty good shooters, and they're made in the USA, too, on top of all that. You can get one of these High Point pistols in 9mm, 40 Smith & Wesson, 45 Auto, ACP, for well under $200. Yeah, a functional tool of defense for less than $200 that works. And by the way, I've seen them for $150. That's what I call very affordable. Sort of like the pistol version of the glorious Mosin-Nagant M930 rifle. Mwahaha. It's so reasonably priced that just about anyone can afford one. Pistols like that High Point and some other inexpensive models are the Saturday night specials that the antis have been going on about since the 1960s. The Tennessee State Legislature of the 1870s would have hated that gun. By the way, back then they were called suicide specials. In modern times, like now, Dianne Feinstein's gone on about them. Michael Bloomberg, the mayor of New York City, has. Rahm Emanuel, current mayor of Chicago, has. Senator Barbara Boxer has. The Brady folks sure have. Josh Sugarman over at the so-called Violence Policy Center has. They all talk about these cheap Saturday night specials. Folks, are you aware of the origin of that term, Saturday night special? No? Okay, time for a little education. The term Saturday night special is actually the shortened version of the actual expression, and I'm having a little difficulty saying this, but I need to, quote, Niggertown Saturday night special, close quote. Yes, unfortunately, it's true. That's the actual expression, folks. Maybe that's why the antis use the term Saturday night special disparagingly to refer to guns who they claim have only one purpose, to commit street crime with. And what image pops up most often of these street criminals, thanks to a constant saturation on television? Black people. Yeah, those people. That black-on-black crime. That's the image. And the antis are still, to this day, perpetuating it. Look how they talk about Chicago or parts of Washington, D.C. today. Oh, of course they'll deny it. Because, you know, it's not politically correct anymore. But I assure you, they would love to disarm those black gangbangers they have in their minds. I've pointed it out before, folks. You want to get the cops to show up to your present location inside of 2 minutes? Just tell them, there's a black male with a gun! those people. So when today's antis talk about Saturday night specials, they're really talking about Tennessee's intent after the Civil War. They want to price law-abiding poor folks out of being able to legally purchase a firearm, a tool of self-defense. Don't believe me? Well, note the bans in the housing projects. Check those out. Well, now, fortunately, those are getting challenged and defeated in court, thank goodness. But the fact that they were there should tell you something. Oh, and if pricing weren't enough. Huh. Now we get into licensing. Turns out, licensing, or permitting, as we call it today. Yep, I'm talking about permits to own guns like some states have. Also has its very basis in Jim Crow. That's what we're going to address when we get back. Station ID break coming up, and then we get right into it.
The forums are a great place to interact with the podcasters and listeners to your favorite podcast. Visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the forums button at the top of the page and sign up for your free membership. Gunrightsradio.com.
I've heard a lot of talk from some folks defending the quote-unquote need for a permitting system to allow people to own guns. I'm not talking about a concealed carry permit here. I'm talking about an ownership permit. Just to own one. New York has this. Illinois has this. They call it a firearm owner's ID card, I think. I know that the acronym is FOID card. You need permission from the state to so much as buy a gun or ammunition for it. Oh, boy. Talk about poll taxes. Here's another real gem. This is from Virginia's University Law Review back in the day. You're going to love this. It called for, and I quote, a prohibitive tax on the privilege. The privilege of what, pray tell? Why, of selling handguns. This was to disarm, and again, I quote, the son of Ham. That means black people, folks. Why? Because of their, quote, cowardly practice of toting guns has been one of the most fruitful sources of crime. Let a Negro board a railroad train with a quart of mean whiskey and a pistol in his grip, and the chances are that there'll be a murder, or at least a row, before he alights. Close quote. Alights, in this older context, means to settle down. And that's what the southern states did. Check this out. 1910. Georgia passed a state constitutional amendment that limited handgun ownership to only those who obtained a license. To get a license, you had to meet the following conditions. 1. 18 years or older. 2. You must give a bond payable to the state in the sum of $100. And 3. There was an additional fee of 50 cents. Number 2 is particularly interesting here. That bond payable to the state in the sum of $100. Folks, in 1910, $100 was a lot of money. The good folks over at GeorgiaCarry.org estimated it as being about $2,000 in today's money. Now imagine if you had to pay $2,000 for a permit just to own a gun. I'm not talking about carrying one, just the privilege, quote-unquote, of merely owning one in the first place. That sounds just like New York, Illinois, or Washington, D.C. Of course, this same state of Georgia also passed a voter eligibility law that limited voter registration to those who were, 1, of good character, whatever that's supposed to mean, and able to pass a test of citizenship, 2, be able to read and write provisions of the U.S. or Georgia constitutions, or 3, own at least 40 acres of land or $500 in property. Naturally, these provisions would also disenfranchise poor whites. The Georgia State Legislature took care of that by providing that any Georgian who had fought in any war from the American Revolution through the Spanish-American War, this includes the Civil War, you're exempt from those qualifications. But since the Civil War had ended just over 40 years prior, that exemption didn't cover a lot of younger white Southerners. Well, that wasn't going to go over very well. The Georgia State Legislature knew that. So, the exemption was extended to any Georgian descended from a veteran of any of those wars. By the time this thing got passed, most of those younger Georgian whites were grandchildren of Confederate veterans. Any of you ever heard of something called a grandfather clause? This was it. This was the first grandfather clause, and it's where the modern term came from. The same racist discrimination that we know was used to keep blacks from voting was also used to keep blacks or anyone else not white from owning firearms. Now, time goes on. Oh, I assure you, racial prejudice is not limited to the South here, or only against black people. We'll get to that in just a moment. We'll be back in just a bit.
This podcast is supported from donations from listeners like you. Thank you for your support. We welcome one-time donations or a $2 a month subscription to help support this podcast and Gun Rights Radio Network in its effort to bring you the high-quality pro-Second Amendment podcasts. Every dollar you donate goes directly back into the network. So visit gunrightsradio.com and click on the donation button. We accept all types of credit cards, and PayPal accounts are not required. Gunrightsradio.com.
Welcome back. As I was saying, racial prejudice, especially with firearms ownership, was hardly limited to the South. And it certainly wasn't limited to being against black people. It also happened in the North, the Midwest, heck, even out West. I'd like to thank Mr. Clayton Kramer for the following example. Quote, in 1920, the Ohio Supreme Court upheld the conviction of a Mexican for concealed carry of a handgun while asleep in his own bed. Justice Wanamaker's scathing dissent criticized the precedent cited by the majority in defense of this absurdity. Here's what the good justice said. I desire to give some special attention to some of the authorities cited. Supreme Court decisions from Alabama, Georgia, Arkansas, Kentucky, and one or two inferior court decisions from New York, which are given in support of the doctrines upheld by this court. The southern states have very largely furnished the precedents. It is only necessary to observe that the race issue there has extremely intensified a decisive purpose to entirely disarm the Negro, and this policy is evident upon reading the opinions. That's what the good justice said. Now, folks, first off, let's look at something here. First off, what the hell were those police in Ohio doing entering someone's domicile and inspecting him in his own bed, this Mexican fella? And second off, how come it's somehow illegal to be carrying a handgun in your own house any way you feel like? Justice Wanamaker continues, quote, I hold that the laws of the state of Ohio should be so applied and so interpreted as to favor the law-abiding rather than the law-violating people. If this decision shall stand as the law of Ohio, a very large percentage of the good people of Ohio today are criminals because they are daily committing criminal acts by having these weapons in their own homes for their own defense. The only safe course for them to pursue, instead of having the weapon concealed on or about their person or under their pillow at night, is to hang the revolver on the wall and put it below a large placard with these words inscribed. The Ohio Supreme Court, having decided that it is a crime to carry a concealed weapon on one's person in one's home, even in one's bed or bunk, this weapon is hung upon the wall that you may see it, and before you commit any burglary or assault, please, Mr. Burglar, hand me my gun. Close quote. Justice Wanamaker had a sense of humor in his rather scathing dissent, didn't he? And I think he was right. Oh, and Florida's post-Civil War gun restriction law, of 1893? Well, in the case of Watson versus Stone in 1941, 48 years later, here's what one enlightened Florida jurist, one state Supreme Court Justice Buford, put it. Quote, "I know something of the history of this legislation. The original Act of 1893 was passed when there was a great influx of Negro laborers in this state drawn here for the purpose of working in turpentine and lumber camps. The same condition existed when the Act was amended in 1901, and the Act was passed for the purpose of disarming the Negro laborers and to thereby reduce the unlawful homicides that were prevalent in turpentine and sawmill camps, and to give the white citizens in sparsely settled areas a better feeling of security. The statute was never intended to be applied to the white population, and in practice has never been so applied." Close quote. That last sentence is worth repeating. The statute was never intended to be applied to the white population, and in practice has never been so applied. But come on, this isn't 1893 anymore. Heck, it's not even 1941. This is the year 2013. We're in the 21st century now. So why is this liberal boy here even bringing all that dusty, musty history up? Here's why. Remember I mentioned the housing projects? Who do you typically see living there? I can tell you who I typically see living there. And it ain't the white folks. It's the brown folks. There may be some white folks living in the projects, but I've seen plenty of instances of the projects. I have yet to see a majority of white families living in them. Do you know that for a very long time, firearms ownership and possession were banned in the projects? The projects can be pretty rough, folks. Just ask my dad. Kind of like Otis McDonald of McDonald versus Chicago fame, that Supreme Court decision. That was the case that established that the Second Amendment does, in fact, convey to the states, just like the other nine amendments. Otis McDonald, a black man who lives in Chicago, was denied his right to own a firearm for his own defense by the officials of the city of Chicago. This was during the Mayor Daley days. Well, he sued the city of Chicago and won. And now Chicago's city officials are doing everything it can to erect, quote, "the most restrictive barriers that will still pass constitutional muster," close quote. Just like Washington, D.C. has done. You know Washington, D.C.'s nickname? Y'all know it? It's Chocolate City. Turns out a lot of black people live in D.C., hence the nickname. Emily Miller, I've mentioned her once before, a blonde news reporter for the Washington Times in that city, she went through the process to legally purchase a handgun. By the time she was done, she had spent close to, something like $1,200 for a roughly $600 pistol. This was because of the paperwork, the expensive training requirement, $150, the transfer fee to the only legal D.C. gun dealer, $125, and a bunch of other fees and barriers. Oh, then she had to wait a couple months to actually get her gun once all this was done. Emily is a senior editor for a major newspaper. She can afford it. As inconvenient as it is, she can actually afford it. But the typical not-so-well-off resident of Washington, D.C.? Not likely. I remind you that the majority population in D.C. is black, with a healthy Latino population growing, and most of those folks are hardly what I would call rich. And this happens all over the country, by the way, including in President Barack Obama's hometown of Chicago. In part two, coming up in our next episode, we're going to show you how what you've just heard continues to happen today, and the importance of not allowing these gun restriction proposals to go forward. This is Cowboy T signing off for now. Until next time. Till then, safe shooting, study your history, keep practicing, and we'll see you soon.